It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Behind the board, back from his trip to New York City.
Yes.
Kobe Slagle, good to have you back, sir.
Thank you, good to be back.
And sitting in with me, Joe Shearer of the Film Yap. I would have had the entire Film Yap crew, but Christopher Lloyd has a legitimate excuse. How are you, Joe? Can we have his mic on for some reason? Let's try that. Very good. And we want to say a special welcome to Joel Lloyd, who was born about a little after midnight this morning. And as I already put on his Facebook, do not take the child to the Saw 3D screening. Please, don't be those parents. No, he will not. But welcome, and hope everybody is resting well in all sorts of ways. Now you really have to watch Away We Go.
Oh, yeah.
Great film. Maybe not the first one for the child, but we'll get there. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just great.
Cool. Well, it is fall. So, you know, you were...
Officially.
It is officially fall, mm-hmm. And then we got membership drive coming up later this month.
Yes, we do.
And Plaza Suite opens the 15th at Scottish Rite Cathedral, directed by yours truly. But another sign of this fall is we have grown-up movies that have been popping up more and more. We had Wall Street last week, and we have another film with backstabbing business, and it's The Social Network, and it is the latest film from director David Fincher, who's... apparently allowed to have street cred now that he has an Oscar nomination for the wrong film. But I like Benjamin Button, although somebody in this building who will Stacy has hates it with the heat of a thousand suns. I mean, like Kristen Stewart hatred. It's don't bring it up to her. I'll bring her back on the show sometime, but she will she'll yeah. But anyway, of course, David Fincher is also known for Seven, Alien 3, Zodiac, Fight Club, The Game, and many, many others. And
I think you were telling me that I needed to see Seven.
You have not seen Seven?
I have not.
You have not seen Seven. You need to smash yourself into a wall.
How is that beneficial at all? How does that help the situation?
Well, no, we're gonna get to your segment, Mr. Slagle, a little later on in the show. What is Kobe watching? Because it is also... No. Well, you haven't heard about this segment, have you? Well, I'll explain it to you a little later on. Yeah, it started because of spaghetti westerns. We have moved on to other things, and this week's subject is also involving half the Screen Actors Guild dying, or actually half of Hollywood passing away in the last 5 days. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, yes, The Social Network. It's written by Aaron Sorkin. We have Jesse Eisenberg and Justin Timberlake and Brenda Song for you fans of Disney TV, and Kobe, you'll appreciate this, Rashida Jones in business attire. We'll get to that in a little bit, but it's about the making of Facebook. Don't know how truthful it is, but then again, that never stopped Casey Affleck, among other things. So here is some audio for The Social Network.
Thank you.
do something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles.
I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
That got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions? You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind. It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined.
Get left behind.
Let's sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and what you write as a check.
You guys were the inventors of Facebook. Invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Do you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
This is our time.
You're being accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Ladies and gentlemen, now I don't know if anybody has latched on to this film critic snark, not a really snark, but a little quip, but dare I say this is the Silicon Valley Citizen Kane. And I know David Edelstein on Fresh Air, of course, also compared it to Citizen Kane as far as very successful and very lonely. And that is definitely the case with the Jesse Eisenberg character. I was absolutely riveted watching this film this morning.
Yeah, for a film that has almost nothing but talk, almost Glengarry Glenn Ross kind of riveted.
Kind of. And if you had told me, and I remember the very first scene involves Jesse Eisenberg's character and his girlfriend, and they're on the verge of breaking up. And it's written by Aaron Sorkin, and the almost Mamet-esque back and forth. And my brain went, the whole film can't be like this, right? I love that, but I'm going to be exhausted after watching this. And if you would have told me that there's a 2-hour film about Harvard D-bags creating something on the internet, and it was going to be this more exciting than Inception, I just said you were nuts. Of course, it also helps that it is written by Aaron Sorkin and directed by David Fincher. This film is amazing because it cuts back and forth between the creation of Facebook, who was right, who was wrong in taking credit for it, and some sit-down litigation between lawyers. That's where the Rashida Jones character comes in. And it's that's right, because there was there's a pair of twins who brought in Mark Zuckerberg to create the website, help create the website, and he just kind of waited and made his own version of it. And then there was his financial partner. Just a completely mesmerizing, riveting. I was, dare I say, on the edge of my seat. It's that good. And I snarked before about Zodiac. That was a film that's criminally still underwatched even today. And I think this is a companion piece to that. Zodiac, of course, was about the Zodiac Killer, and that was a film that was more like All the President's Men than Seven. It was about the daily grind of investigating the case. And in this one, it was the creation of a website that just boomed, and I mean way bigger than anybody had expected, and nobody was ready for it except for one guy who did all the right moves for all the bad reasons. So I just gushed about it. Joe, your take.
Yeah, it was really amazing. Like I said, for all the talking, it was incredible how much it holds your attention. The thing that, not to me, is surprising, but maybe many will find surprising, is Justin Timberlake.
And a big quote, I talked to him earlier, big shout out to our colleague Ed Johnson-Ott, who wrote the review in Nouveau. And now what's fun is when he, in his articles quite often, he will, you know, cite other titles that actor or director has appeared in. For instance, Jesse Eisenberg, of course, Zombieland, and things like that. But when we get to Justin Timberlake, he acknowledges him with Blank in a Box.
Right, rightly so.
not Black Snake Moan, not Alpha Dog, Blank in a Box. So thank you, Ed. You made me laugh out loud, and that was, but he's really good in this. And I think there's a thing. Timberlake is really, you know, the films that he's done, I think Black Snake Moan prior to this was the best of it. And, you know, all the stuff he's done on SNL, the guy's talented. He's been able to shed his early career and has morphed into something else. And he, of course, plays the guy who created Napster. And, boy, there's some skittish, druggy paranoia going on with that character. I can't believe there might be an Academy Award nomination for Mr. Timberlake. It's that, between that and being well liked by the business, mm-hmm. he's really good in this.
Yeah, he's done nothing but ingratiate me to his particular talent since I've seen him, especially acting. And I remember a really classy move, music related, where he publicly decried that he won some music award that he thought Johnny Cash should have won that year for Hurt, which always, I love him forever just for that. But he's really outstanding in this. And there's a lot of this is another one of those movies too that if you watch it and appreciate it, it's very quotable too.
Which you said, so you and
and Nick Rogers and I our colleague at the here. Film, and on the IFJA, we've already started throwing a few of them around. The twins that you mentioned before have a couple of great lines for, they're kind of these entitled, kind of jockish, that they do crew. They're rowers.
Yeah, and are played by one actor.
Yeah,
which I didn't realize until I read Ed Johnson's that review, and I thought, wow, what a so there's some more technical prowess that's not showy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only showy thing I could think of was there was a scene where I think it was after Gates was speaking, mm-hmm. and I could tell it was kind of computer generated snow. Yeah. Minor quibble.
Yeah.
That and Rashida Jones's hair was too short for my taste. But anyway, sorry, I'm back. But yeah, that's a way of using some computer animation or some split screen for good.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I was and of course my favorite is when they compare we're going to be dressed up as skeletons
chasing
Danny LaRusso around campus.
Yep, yeah. And there is one line at one point, and I hope I'm not giving too much away, but where they're first angry at Jesse Eisenberg's character Mark Zuckerberg, and they're talking about what they're going to do to him. And one of them says, "I'm 6'4", 220, and there's two of me." You know, so, and it's just this out of left field line from mm-hmm. These Harvard upper crust, kind of, as you said, D-bags. That it was really just a great little moment. And they're good characters. They're not just your standard, they're not just the standard Cobra Kai kind of guy.
Yeah, these were not. There are no fisticuffs in this film, which really kind of justify that there could be.
Oh, yeah.
That when the smashing of a laptop is probably the biggest piece of action mm-hmm. in a film, and it's still one of the best things. and just, this is a film, it also reminded me, along with Squid and the Whale, anybody who says Jesse Eisenberg is a Michael Cera knockoff and he's just doing, third generation Woody Allen,
mm-hmm.
no.
Oh, no.
He was directed to do that in Zombieland and mm-hmm. Adventureland and all the other pictures, some of the other pictures where he's played somebody young. He is absolutely ruthless in this film.
Yeah.
And I guess this is the venom that I wished Wall Street had week.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost the Wall Street of its generation, or mm-hmm. as I said before, the Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. And it all, I don't think we're giving away too much, it's all because of a breakup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a scene early on when when Jesse Eisenberg's character's girlfriend breaks up with him, and he develops this website within a matter of hours,
mm-hmm.
and it causes a huge sensation.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. I mean, it's pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, and at the same time, of course, he's blogging embarrassing details about her.
Right.
So, yeah, some of them are true, and some of them are just mean spirited.
But yeah, it's to see just an exciting film with very little physical action. It's all mental. It's all technical.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, there's some major backstabbing in this. And I know somebody's not happy, but then again, he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
The world's youngest billionaire
mm-hmm.
with a really cool last moment and a really cool use of a song, which I don't want to give away, but I didn't think he could top the use of Donovan and Zodiac, but it's somewhere up there.
Oh, yeah.
So please, I tend to not talk about the importance of box office. I try not to, and there's been so much pressure about seeing films on opening weekend. Please go see this opening weekend.
Yeah.
This is a film that deserves all of the attention.
Mm-hmm.
This is a film that deserves all the attention that Benjamin Button had last year.
Yeah.
The film is that good, and I hope people remember it at the end of the year. Because I think right now this is the best thing I've seen all year, and I know it's October and we got two more months to go. But
it's right up there.
It's just, it's that damn good. Go check it out. Okay, also opening in theaters, Let Me In. Of course, it's a remake of Let the Right One In.
Yes.
So it's a vampire movie that doesn't have any glitter, and it has two of our favorite young actors working together finally. Why not? It's Chloe Moritz, who was Hit Girl in Kick-Ass, and Cody Smit-McPhee, who was the young boy in The Road.
Yes.
And one of our favorite That Guys, Richard Jenkins, is in this film as well.
Yes.
So if you like vampire stories that don't involve Kristen Stewart or shirtless werewolves, that is opening. Apparently, you know what? Apparently, Chloe is not going to be doing a Disney film anytime soon.
I don't think so.
But so hopefully there's no remake of Little Girl That Lives Down the Lane.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, it's too early to call her the generation Jodie Foster. Case 39, a thriller with Renee Zellweger. Let's move on. Sorry, didn't screen it for us.
And
even though Ian McShane's in it. And Jack Goes Boating, starring and directed by Philip Seymour Hoffman, Amy Ryan's in it. You know what? Let Hoffman direct. What the hell?
Oh, yeah.
The guy's been working. Go for it.
Yeah.
And then King Korn and Big River, which is happening tonight at Epworth United Methodist Church, which is about food and about corn's impact on food and the economy and how corn winds up in everything, except Soylent Green. That's natural.
Yeah.
And then also opening in theaters, and you got to see this, was Farewell, which is about the U.S.-Soviet operations that pretty much ended the Cold War.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It was the end of the Soviet bloc, as they say at the beginning. The highlight of this to me, it's, of course, a sort of a thriller. I believe it's mostly in French, and but it bounces back between Russian and French and English, and features a few very recognizable American actors. Willem Dafoe is in it, and Fred Ward plays Ronald Reagan.
No,
it is. I kind of joked to you beforehand that
Remo Williams is Ronald Reagan.
Remo Williams, yes, the guy from, I can't remember his name in Tremors. He was Ronald Reagan.
No, it's Fred Ward.
Yeah,
no, Fred Ward's more than that. He's a wonderful That Guy.
Oh yeah,
which I think you guys brought up on your character actor.
Yeah. He is on the list. We'll be there sometime soon.
But yeah, what did you say about his performance as Reagan?
I kind of joked to you that Patrick Swayze's Ronald Reagan was better in Point Break.
See, he wore a mask of Reagan. Kobe, 100% adrenaline.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Don't worry. Yeah. Later.
It's still Catherine Bigelow's best film. So.
Oh, stop it! What's the matter with you?
No. with all due respect,
Blue Steel.
but anyway, it actually involves these a sort of a nobody who gets involved in the spy business between Russia and France, delivering secrets to the United States from the Soviets, and kind of vice versa. He comes into possession of a lot of different sorts of plans of the space shuttle, for instance, and you know, things like that, and he turns into sort of this mole for the United States, and bad things happen from there.
Is nothing as it seems?
Nothing is as it seems. Well, yeah. That's nothing is as it seems, except for Fred Ward doing only a... He's doing a very mild in-and-out kind of impression of Ronald Reagan.
Like Randy Quaid on SNL,
yeah,
when he's not squatting.
Yeah, you get just a little... If you really listen, you can hear a little bit of that kind of breathy thing Reagan did, but... most of the time, he's just like, screw it, I'm going to do the James Cromwell thing from W and just do my own thing. So.
I see. But he's not doing like late Reagan where, you know,
Reagan's
autobiography is 600 pages of the word pudding.
Yeah, it's not a bumbling caricature kind of thing.
Okay.
He's more plays it straight. So
I see.
It's good. It's you know, we kind of laugh, but it was really a pretty decent performance, I think.
And the film overall?
The film overall is good. It's, you know, it's kind of heavy on intrigue and... And I don't. To be honest, I had kind of a hard time keeping up with it, you know, between the subtitles and the kind of the thick kind of political atmosphere. But if you pay a little attention, you'll be able to catch on, and you'll by the end you'll kind of see what they're saying. And it's really kind of a film where the good guys are the everyday men, the bad guys are the governments of all of the countries involved. So
that's shocking.
Yeah.
That's about as shocking as Wall Street last week. You know what? The banks are bad. Hey, by the way, you mentioned W. I miss old crazy Oliver Stone.
Oh, yeah.
I miss crazy out of
his mind.
Warm,
fuzzy Oliver Stone is just so fun.
Yeah, love that Parenthood ending. All right, we're going to take a short break and talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. I'm sorry, the box you can rent stuff at the store is open.
Oh.
The McDonald's is open for you to go in and find your box with the movies inside.
I don't want to go there. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here, also known as Rental Intervention, here at WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Also available as a podcast and is available on iTunes. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook. Joe Scherer, the Film Me app, is here with me. Kobe Slagle's working the board. And, yes, we also know it's fall because summer movies are now starting to pop up. Okay, this really wasn't a summer movie. It came out in May. But it's summer blockbuster season. But
it's the kickoff.
Yes, thank you. It was the kickoff. Dress rehearsals are over. It's time for NFL. Well, wrong thing. But yeah, Iron Man 2 is finally out on DVD. It's the return of Robert Downey Jr. and another, some black guy. Oh, I'm sorry. This time it's Don Cheadle. That's right, not Terrence Howard. And you wouldn't mean what? Don't you remember? Because Terrence Howard was in the first one, and then there was creative differences between Mr. Howard and the director, so he was replaced by Don Cheadle. Yeah. So the joke is they'll just let any old black guy be in the third one. Abdul Hakim Shabazz wants to be in Iron Man 3. There's more Sam Jackson in this one. There's a little less Gwyneth Paltrow. There's extra Scarlett Johansson, Mickey Rourke, Sam Rockwell, and Gary Shandling. Somebody lifted a rock, and there he was. Yeah. So, and it's directed by, and a brief appearance by, Jon Favreau. Here's, in case you missed it.
Can we pick up now where we left off? Mr. Stark, please.
Yes, dear.
Can I have your attention?
Absolutely.
Our priority here is to have you turn over the Iron Man weapon to the American people.
Well, you can forget it. We're safe. America is secure. You want my property? You can't have it. But I did you a big favor. I have successfully privatized world peace.
We're adjourned for the day. You've been a delight.
Okay, give me a smooch for good luck. I might not make it back.
Go get him, boss.
You complete me.
come from a family of thieves and butchers. And now, like all guilty men, you try to rewrite your own history. And you forget all the lives the Stark family has destroyed. There will be blood in the water, and the sharks will come.
Makes me happy now that that trailer's been played, that Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Bill Ward will get extra checks. See, it's, the music is not entirely AC/DC. There's at least one Black Sabbath tune. Mm-hmm. Ozzy has the money, he just doesn't know it. Yes, this time around, Tony Stark is back. He came, well, I shouldn't say he came out. He came out as Iron Man, so to speak, and he's got a new adversary with Mickey Rourke as a Russian bad guy who's got revenge on his mind, thanks to Dad. Mr. Stark, the eldest Stark, and he's backed up by a corporate D-bag, that's the official word here at Film Sociology, played by Sam Rockwell, and Scarlett Johansson shows up as an assistant, and no, there's no pillow fight between Gwyneth and Scarlett, sadly. Is that on the Blu-ray? Is that
I looked for it, I have not found it. I think maybe it's an Easter egg hidden somewhere.
John Favreau, what the hell's wrong with you? No, and yes, there's more Sam Jackson, because, and I bet there's going to be even more Sam Jackson when Iron Man 3 comes out. Mm-hmm. This is a film that kind of delivered what we expected. It's a sequel, it's a step down, still enjoyable, although I don't need a little social commentary on celebrity aspect. I don't need a drunk Robert Tony Stark scratching a record at his own party in his suit. That's a little embarrassing. Mickey Rourke, sadly underused. I think Sam Rockwell makes more of an impression, and of course he's probably going to be showing up in the third film as well. Mm-hmm. I think when I watched Rourke in this, I thought of Thomas Hayden Church. No, really, if you think about it, because he got a nomination for Sideways, and then you immediately go for a big check, and he was actually pretty good in a pretty disappointing Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And Rourke, of course, got nominated for The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. I think he should have won. But, got a big check for this. And by the way, he actually has more to do in The Expendables than he did in Iron Man 2.
Yeah. And so. He's almost the... He's just there because they need a bad guy,
they
really.
They need a big physical bad guy to go toe-to-toe with Tony Stark.
He's the one character, Iron Man is, that has his alter ego has a bad guy to correspond with the super-powered bad guy, in a sense, I guess.
Yeah.
In this case, but yeah, it's... And then, of course, you did reference Don Cheadle outshining Terrence Howard from the first one.
I feel bad for Terrence, man. His post hustle and flow choices have just been wow.
And they even gave him the line in the first film when he gets to look at the Iron Man suit and say, "Next time, baby." There's no next time.
No,
for him.
I'm afraid not.
And depending on who you ask, maybe it's his own fault.
Yeah, that's a Rashomon thing. Yeah. I don't think we're ever gonna know who entirely is in fault other than that. Mm-hmm. So Joe, your thoughts on that film? Good, not great for me.
Yeah, I was perfectly, completely happy with it. I'm a huge comic book movie guy. That's what I live for, and I love to drag my son to those, and he loves them. Had a perfectly good time. It was not the surprise. The first one was, of course, it was a gigantic surprise. The first one was so good.
That's the other thing. I think that was I can call that the Pirates of the Caribbean disease. Mm-hmm. Is that Downey was so strong, mm-hmm. and we hadn't seen him that strong in a while. And John Favreau, you know, much to his credit, knows the comic book genre and knows it pretty well, which helps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was just a really, I think that made some people's top 10 list. I think that made my honorable mention this year.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, of course, I thought this film was going to be in the middle of the pack for the summer blockbusters. Guess what? It's near the top because the summer was really bad.
Yeah, the summer was not good. Yeah, but, you know, we get all the moments we need. And this is really kind of a transitory kind of film.
Right, a stepping stone. So hopefully, three better really step up and, try to match one.
And you got, you've got Thor coming out.
Giant hammer. Yes, folks, there's a giant hammer at the end of the credits. and Ken Branagh's directing it.
Yeah.
And we have another superhero with dad issues. We don't have any superheroes with mom issues. You notice that?
No.
Why is that? You're the comic book guy. You're not the comic book guy, but you're
I'm
a comic book
the,
guy.
You're
married.
I don't know.
I said it. And I think you also blog wearing pants.
Yeah, most of the time.
Okay.
Now, podcasting may be a different story.
I have no comment on that. You stay over there and keep things on. So we'll see. So anyway, I guess overall this is how we felt about Iron Man 2.
Now that was a good movie.
It was. Okay, so we got some other titles that I didn't see because I've been too busy directing Plaza Suite. But you saw Babies.
Yeah.
Aren't they adorable?
They are. They're so cute.
Now we have four babies from four different parts of the world and four different families. So the difference between this and being forced to watch home movies is...
It's about 20 minutes worth of almost veiled social commentary.
But the film is how long?
It's a 90 minute thing. It's a full length film. The whole point of the film is you're seeing these babies from different parts of the world, how they interact with each other, how they grow.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting for, like I said, the first half hour, 45 minutes or so, and then you kind of go, okay, now what? And they say, hold on, stay with me. And then you say...
Actually, they say that. They actually verbally say, hold on, audience.
In a figurative sense. Uh-huh. And then you say that again. Well, come on, what are we going to get? Hold on. And then the credits hit, and you're like, okay, that was fun. Yeah, like you said, I could go home and watch my kids smack each other in the head, you know, at home.
Is there head smacking in this?
There's a little bit. Just a little bit. But and interestingly enough, there is no narration. There's almost no dialogue in the film whatsoever. There's a little bit of kind of background talking from some parents. Other than that, it's babies sitting there looking around, doing things that babies do. That's about it.
Maybe you'll get something out of it, Kobe. You are childless.
Yeah.
Not Brad Childress. So that's a whole other thing. Okay. Well, that's lovely. I think also. Oh, get him to the Greek.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So,
very funny.
Now I can't remember. Is Mr. Apatow's name linked to this, or is it just the Apatow-looking players?
No, it's just those players. This is actually a spinoff. It is not really a sequel to Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
But it's the Russell Brand character in Sarah Marshall.
Yes.
I was a little worried that he was, because he was very funny in Marshall. He only had 10, 20 minutes of screen time. I was worried about when you take a character like that and flesh it out. So
yeah. He was fine. Jonah Hill, of course, is in it also, and he was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall as
same
as,
thing.
Yeah,
he was short.
but he was a different guy. He's a different guy in this one. He's an executive trying to now Russell Crowe.
Now Russell Crowe.
That would have been a movie.
Movie stars being rock stars. What are you talking about?
Russell Brand's character falls off the wagon. Of course, he's a kind of recovering alcoholic drug addict and Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And apparently going to be starring in a remake of Arthur. I can't wait.
He is. That is confirmed with spy pictures and,
whatever.
Lots of conjecture there.
Okay.
Good times. Sean Combs, Mr. Puff Daddy, P. Diddy.
Now, is he better in this than he was in I'm Still Here? when it comes to acting?
He was very good in this, and he actually says, for me, the line of the year.
Uh-oh.
Is,
wait a minute, can we say it?
I will pause at the appropriate time.
Thank you.
My house is going to look like a blanking werewolf.
What?
totally out of context. Go see the film to kind of find out.
Okay, thanks.
It is uproarious, and he's very good in this.
That's for me. My course is I forgot to mention earlier with Social Network. I want a business card that says I'm the film critic. B.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll go check that out as well. Okay. Also, a few titles to bring up: Coco Chanel and Igor Stravinsky. Where we had not one but two films in a year about Coco Chanel.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know. It's fascinating. Also, The Killer Inside Me, which if certain little boxes would get around to, you know what bugs me about the thing? I went over there. I was actually going to look for a Greek.
Mm-hmm.
to rent, and it's not available because not all the studios are playing ball.
Yeah.
And they have images for The Killer Inside Me. Mm-hmm. They weren't there.
Yeah.
Not available. Yeah. But it's based on a Jim Thompson novel with Casey Affleck as a small-town sheriff who, well, he kills people on the side. And also along for the ride are Jessica Alba and Kate Hudson.
Yeah.
So,
ooh, like Kate Hudson.
You know what? I like looking at Kate Hudson because her post Almost Famous stuff has been bad.
Yeah.
Real bad. TRBL, terrible,
yes.
To quote Sir Charles. A couple of titles that came out on Blu-ray. And I guess this is, we'll go back to the old question. You probably got it in the mail, smart guy. But on Warner Blu-ray, the 1933 King Kong.
I did not get that.
Yeah.
I did ask for it. Did not get it.
Wow. So that's, you can see Faye Ray in all her glory.
Mm-hmm.
A Criterion, this is one I remember seeing this when it came out on video, because it didn't come to Michigan, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to check it out again. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Which is a POW Japanese POW camp film with David Bowie, and this was seriously, this is like 1984, and it was really good. It was like a decent prisoner of war camp picture. So Criterion has put that out. Criterion also put out The Thin Red Line, which I'm one of the few people I think I really enjoy The Thin Red Line. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to sit through the 6-hour nonsensical yammering version of The Thin Red Line. I liked it that much. I even liked it better than Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. Don't hate. I enjoyed it that much. So there. You were bored to tears, weren't you?
You know what? I was sick the day I watched that film, and I was
going to give it
in and out. And it's just one long big blur to me. So
you want to give it another shot? You should give it another shot.
I should give it another shot. I probably will someday.
And I know you're stoked because also you didn't get King Kong, but on Warner Blu-ray, Superman, Batman, Apocalypse.
Yeah, I did get that. It's.
Hey, this is...
That's my thing, and I actually had a neat little, you can see a little duality there. There's a Marvel release this week, too, The Astonishing X-Men, which is a motion comic. They're getting away from these animated movies and doing motion comics. And,
right.
I like the animated films better. They're standalone. They need to be better. They need to have some cohesion. But, you know, they're fun. You know,
okay.
They're PG-13, so... you know, be careful, parents, letting your kids watch those. There's just enough.
You mean just slapping a kid in front of a TV and putting on animation and everything's fine?
Yeah,
it's not that?
Yeah, just because it's some sort of non-live action thing.
Oh, it's a good thing we avoided Dark Knight. Here, watch this, kid.
Yeah, here's South Park. Let's watch that.
Hey, if they don't involve excrement or certain body parts, anyway, we're going to move on. All right, we're going to take a short break. Got to go through all the obits this week, and this is incorporated with this week's segment, What's Kobe Watching Now? You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well,
You know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome, Joe Scheer. Welcome back to Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. That's us at HD, WFYI. We are gracious with our guest. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. The show is available as a podcast and on iTunes. Joe Scheer of the Film Yap is here with me. Kobe Slagle's working the board. What do you guys got going with the Film Yap? I mean, did you have to work it yourself this week? Because I know Chris was on standby for a while.
Yeah, he was a trooper. He was at the Social Network, I think. I don't think he was at Let It In later on in the week. But, yeah, he was definitely glancing at that phone during the film.
So. I totally understand. I was there. Yeah. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I went to, a band, Little Charlie and the Nightcats and Rusty's Inn were playing at the Noodle the night of my wife's due date.
Oh.
And I had done a piece on them for Nouveau, and it was customary for me to deliver the article to the person, to the band, and I said to my sitcom wife, I'm like, honey, one set, and I'll come straight home. And this is bad. I had musicians. I had told the story to the musicians, and they're like, what are you doing here, you idiot? Go home. And then 9 days later, Emma arrived. So good to have a new Lloyd in the family.
Oh, yes, yes. And, he hopefully is actually letting him listen right now to the two of us yammer.
Oh, good Lord. And I should say then, on Chris, on behalf, if you're listening, on behalf of John Katzenberger, I owe you an apology. We apologize for invading your Facebook page. He wrote about being one of the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, and you know we called him vile, nasty things like book learner, and that he eats with utensils, and
yes,
probably wears pants when he writes. So I apologize, Chris, for damaging your character. So there you go.
Yeah.
What you guys got going this week?
We've
got all sorts of things on the page.
We have got all of this free stuff that we have to give to people.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
not you.
Yeah, you can't have any, sorry. We only give this to people who have seen Seven. Sorry.
Oh, boy, that hurt.
Oh, man.
Oh,
to segue into something we're going
to
talk about.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, like I said, free stuff. We're trotting out a lot of kind of new features for our commentary section. We have, as we mentioned before, That Guy. I did Danny Trejo. We're going to be doing a few more.
I'm sorry, 66-year-old Danny Trejo.
Yes, yes. You know, we did that for Machete. One of our guys, I believe, wants to do Robert Patrick. So
that's good.
Yeah, so
good.
We're going to hopefully we'll surprise a little bit, but we'll have some good. We also have the Cinema Smackdown. My first one was
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the White Russian movies. And by the way, I vote for Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Sorry. You didn't have, what was it? Wasn't there one called Dreaming with Tim Matheson
and my
Jack Gordon, 1979?
Yes, my stepdad is a certified bowling fanatic. He has a picture of him at, I think he's at maybe a couple months old, with where his dad had taken him to the bowling alley, and he's got a picture of him in a bowling bag. So he's one of those bowling guys, and he actually referenced that to me when I told him about this article. So
good for him.
Yeah,
I vote Lebowski on that one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
here's an article that was in The Onion this week. Script has been floating around Hollywood for 75 years. Mm-hmm. That's all. I'm not
which
read
one?
All
which
of
one
it.
Are they talking about?
No, it's let's see. According to Hollywood sources, Warner Brothers Entertainment officially acquired the rights this week to the long unproduced film project entitled The Final Symphony, which has reportedly been floating around in various states of production with seven different studios since 1935. undergone at least 600 drafts by 2,250 writers, and different Hollywood stars linked to it, including Spencer Tracy, Tyrone Power, Montgomery Clift, Sidney Poitier, Burt Reynolds, Dudley Moore, Cher, Liam Neeson, and Justin Long. Thank you, The Onion.
Lovely.
All right, we got to – everybody raise a glass, because there was I think at least 3 minutes of death montage happened this week.
Yes.
Gloria Stewart, of course,
mm-hmm,
who lived to be 100,
yes,
and was the oldest actress to be nominated for an Academy Award. She was 87 when she got nominated for Titanic.
Yep.
Dang.
I know. She played Old Rose.
Mm-hmm.
She shrunk, apparently.
Yep.
Because Young Rose was played by Kate Winslet. But this was the thing. It just kind of blew my mind. She's had a long, long career. And somebody on The Onion, not me, wrote that she was quite the babe in The Invisible Man. 1932.
Wow.
So I looked through some of the... Of course, after Titanic, she appeared in the bizarre Million Dollar Hotel. I remember she also had a very brief part in My Favorite Year. She's the woman who's celebrating the anniversary that dances with Peter O'Toole. Mm-hmm. Now we're really going back. I actually have this on my DVR. I just haven't gotten around to watching it. She was Queen Anne in the 1939 version of The Three Musketeers.
Wow.
And Gold Diggers in 1935. Yeah, she was the ingenue in, I'm sorry, 1933, The Invisible Man. So, salute, Gloria. Yes. Way to go.
You earned it.
Definitely. Also, if you're a longtime listener of Film Sociology, you might remember the old intro where there's a scene from Marty, and it's Ernest Borgnine and another actor is Joe Mantell talking about what do you want to do tonight? I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing tonight? And they start arguing. Well, that actor, Joe Mantell, died this past week, and he's known for two things. Besides having a full career of movies and television, and was kind of a character actor, might have to see if he's that guy material for you, Joe.
Yes.
But he was not only that guy, he was not only Ernest Borgnine's best friend in Marty, he was also Jake Gitz, Mr. Gitz, partner in Chinatown, who utters the famous last line, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. So, salute to him. Yes. Where do we start with Tony Curtis? Besides the Flintstones, which I know a few people have brought up.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, this guy got an Oscar nomination for The Defiant Ones. He's done everything from Some Like It Hot, Sweet Smell of Success, Operation Petticoat, The Boston Strangler, yes, even The Bad News Bears Go to Japan,
Spartacus.
The Manitou, Spartacus. Yeah. Yeah, there's that great scene that has been restored where Laurence Olivier is bugging him about snails and oysters. long career, really good actor. And it's interesting because I remember reading in the Golden Turkey Awards, the original Medved books, he was up for Worst Actor.
Really?
And I think part of it maybe has been the accent, maybe. Mm. You know, too many period films where he's doing Terrace Bulba and the Vikings, and he, of course, sounds like he's from the Bronx.
Yeah.
But then again, all the slaves in Spartacus were American actors, so take that for what it is. So, no, so salute to Tony Curtis. That's good. And, of course, as somebody on my Facebook page posted, he should have won the Academy Award for Best Score because he married Janet Leigh. And his finest co-production, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Tony.
And he was a prodigiously virile man as well. I believe he fathered children later in life.
Married six times.
Yeah.
So it was interesting that people would... There were always a little bit of rumors because he was not just handsome, he was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
He was a pretty man. Yeah. I think a lot of people, to use the quote from Raging Bull, which I didn't know whether to believe him or fight him, sort of thing. See, Naked in New York, The Mirror Cracked, Little Miss Marker, Sextet. I've actually seen that with really old Mae West. It's awful. Last Tycoon, a film that is part of the Warner Brothers archive series, and I actually saw it on TCM last week. Lepke, which he played the mobster in that. I have to correct somebody who I correct myself. I was talking with somebody on AM. I forgot he was in both The Great Race and those daring young men in their jaunty jalopies, not the magnificent men in their flying machines. Not With My Wife, You Don't. Suppose They Gave a War, Nobody Came. Sex and the Single Girl, Don't Make Waves. Don't Make Waves is a film. Tony Curtis in the 60s got stuck doing a lot of romantic comedies. And bring up a couple names I've brought up with you, Mr. Slagle. But it was a beach movie that he did with Claudia Cardinale, which you have experienced her.
Yeah.
And the film also features a trampoline scene with Sharon Tate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So
lots of issues there.
That's fun. So also Winchester 73, Houdini, Trapeze, and many others. Director Arthur Penn.
Yes.
If anything else, the man did Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
The man shook the film world as we know it with a really horrendous end to Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
And it's a great combination of French New Wave put into American cinema, among some of the other things he did. My goodness, he did The Miracle Worker, The Left-Handed Gun, Mickey One, which cinched his friendship with Warren Beatty, The Chase, Alice's Restaurant, Little Big Man, Night Moves, The Missouri Breaks, Four Friends, Target, Dead of Winter, and the bizarre Penn and Teller Get Killed. Forgot Arthur Penn directed that. But Penn had a great career, and those are strong, strong films to check out from them.
Oh, yes.
and, of course, Sally Menke, who was the editor for all of Quentin Tarantino's films. She's been nominated. She got nominated twice, once for Pulp Fiction, once for Inglourious Bastards, mm-hmm. and some of the other films. She also worked with Billy Bob Thornton a couple of times. She edited Daddy and Them, which I actually saw.
Yeah.
Ooh. All the Pretty Horses, and some of the other films she worked on without Tarantino, Night Watch, Mulholland Falls, wow. Heaven and Earth. One of her first films as an editor, 1990, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Nice, nice.
Gotta start somewhere.
A classic.
And Mike Perry brought this out for me. The guy who produced the Rockford Files, the A-Team, and the Commish passed this week. So, oh. So we salute all of them. Mr. Slagle, do you have your segment music ready?
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Now, we had moved past spaghetti westerns, thus the birth of this concept.
Yes.
And a couple of weeks ago, while you were in New York, Kobe, is she listening?
She is.
She better. Notice you won't let her meet. You won't let me meet her. That's probably for the best.
Yes.
But 2 weeks ago, when you were on, because it was Jazz Fest weekend, I had him pick up Clint Eastwood's Bird. Which we'll get to somewhere this week, somewhere. But with the passing of great character actor Harold Gould, mm-hmm. I had Mr. Slagle watch The Sting.
Okay.
Mr. Slagle, your thoughts.
Love The Sting. Absolutely love The Sting.
And why did you love it?
One of my favorite movies is and has been for years the Ocean's 11 remake with Clooney and Pitt.
Right.
Everybody. And
that film, that franchise owes a great deal of debt to the Sting,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes. And for years I've been hearing, you like Ocean's 11, you got to see The Sting, this is totally your kind of movie. Okay.
Just haven't gotten around to it. It's all right. Yeah, we'll get you the 7 too. But
thanks to you. Saw it, loved it. Everybody was right. Totally my kind of movie. And just, you know, you watch it and you see, oh my God, that's exactly like Ocean's 11.
If you think about, even before the Ocean's 11 remake, you think about how many con films there have been over the last, since then. There have been so many films about the big con or the big plot twist. I mean, like Ocean's 11 or even something like Closer, mm-hmm. or even to a certain degree last week's Wall Street film, where there's just a big twist of con. And, Tony Bill and George Roy Hill, the writer and director, of course, Newman and Redford, and just a really solid cast.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Shaw, Eileen Brennan. Remember there was that brief period that Eileen Brennan was attractive before Private Benjamin? Between that and The Last Picture Show. But yeah, I'm glad you got to see that. That
thing was awesome.
Yeah, that won Best Picture in 1973 and well-deserved.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mr. Slago, so we're moving on because of the massive amounts of obits that happened this week. So you have, besides Bird in your account, we're going to start things off. Honestly, I couldn't find my copy of Some Like It Hot, so you're just going to have to get on your own and find that. But Sweet Smell of Success with Burt Lancaster and Tony Curtis, brilliant piece of film about fame and power. And it's directed by Ernest Lehman, and Ernest Lehman is one of my all-time favorite screenwriters. And in this one, Curtis plays Sidney Falco, who is a publicist trying to work his way up the ladder to somebody who's not Walter Winchell, but it's played by Burt Lancaster. And as far as the commentary on celebrity and power is still relevant today, but there is hip dialogue that everybody from Quentin Tarantino to Diablo Cody owes their entire, maybe most of their careers, mm-hmm. to a film like Sweet Smell Success. So enjoy that.
Cool.
And that's it for Tony Curtis. That's a great combination of charming and sleaze as far as that character. And since I found, and I can't find my copy of Death Proof, however, I'm excited to hear, I think next week there is going to be a DVD Blu-ray release, yes. of the theatrical release of Grindhouse.
It's about time.
About damn time. So there are two Tarantino films I know you have not seen, which I know, I was stunned too. Mm-hmm. Reservoir Dogs and personally my favorite, Jackie Brown.
Oh yeah, Jackie
Brown. That's his most mature work.
Yes, it does not get to do what it deserves.
It doesn't. And not only did Pam Grier should have been nominated, should have won that year.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, Helen Hunt.
And I think that Robert Forster get nominated?
Robert Forster got a nomination for that and well deserved.
Oh,
another one, another that guy thing,
yeah,
part on that. I remember Fred. I got to interview Fred Williamson, and he said, "Yeah, Forster's been playing that role for me for years." And he does it with Tarantino, and he gets a nomination for it. Of course, based on the great Elmore Leonard novel, Rum Punch.
Oh, yes.
And Tarantino cites Elmore Leonard as a huge influence, and it shows in this. And Elmore Leonard, of course, is going to be speaking, I think, at Butler in December. So we'll have to do a whole show about the good and bad adaptations of his work. So I hope you enjoy Jackie Brown as much as I do. Pam Grier is amazing in it. Great use of Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack.
All the music in that film, of course, that's a Tarantino trademark.
Yeah, I happen to own all those soundtracks. And yeah, Reservoir Dogs, that's the one that started it all. Mm-hmm. Although as our guest was here last week, Mike White, not the Chuck and Buck guy, you know, it was a Ringo Lam film that owes a great deal of, maybe it's just the other way around, you know, that should be acknowledged for that. And because of the death of Arthur Penn, Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway in All Bonnie right. and Clyde.
There you go.
An Academy Award for Estelle Parsons. Mm-hmm. Has a young Gene Hackman, a young Gene Wilder. Mm-hmm. Really, really well-made film.
Sweet deal.
So you are set, sir.
Awesome.
So you got a lot to do between now and next week. And the membership drive.
Yes, and that.
So that's this week's installment of What is Kobe Watching? Bonnie and Clyde, Jackie Brown, Reservoir Dogs, and Sweet Smell of Success. What else have you seen lately, Joe? Anything new, anything old? I'm taking a break from zombie films for a day.
Yeah, I do have a stack of those out
Thank
in my
you.
Car
You'll,
for you.
I'll try to get you in the acknowledgement page.
As I said, Burial Ground will change your life, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Thanks. We'll see if we can. I'll see if I can get to it. Lou Harry and I got to talk about that one.
Yeah. Oh,
we'll,
yeah. That needs to be first on your list.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
I actually just watched. Didn't watch the movie. I did get the Blu-ray of A Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake.
Oh, Jackie Earle Haley.
Yes, and here is the wisdom behind remaking a iconic slasher franchise.
Besides the fact that they can,
yeah,
like dogs licking their elbows.
Oh no, this is the key now to getting it right. Okay.
Oh, okay.
For Freddy, you have to have the glove. You have to have a hat. You have to have the sweater.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not Freddy.
Wow. Thanks.
We get that in the featurette three times from three different people. They
really?
Really wanted to hammer that point home. Yeah. And
wow.
That was as much wisdom as you get. So.
Thanks.
Which is more wisdom than you get from the film, honestly.
Oh, man. See, I was really bummed because Jackie Earle Haley is a guy, I mean, good for him to get a reboot in his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy got a nomination, well-deserved, in Little Children.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, like a lot of actors like that, you get a big project. I thought he was one of the best things about Watchmen.
Yes.
And then I heard he got signed to do that. I thought, well, maybe he's good. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was, you know. I detected a little bit of Forrest Gump in that Freddy voice of his too, watching that featurette. I don't know. He didn't sink the film, but he
didn't
help it that much.
That's a shame. Yeah. That's a shame. And of course, he got to work with Scorsese in Shutter Island. The bad news is it was Shutter Island. I'm sorry. That's my first Scorsese letdown.
As Michael Caine once said about Jaws: The Revenge, I haven't seen the film, but I saw the house that the film built.
Yeah. So long as you acknowledge that, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's got to be another segment: is actors who know they made rubbish. So, oh, Michael Caine, that's fun. Oh, yeah, that's a whole segment for you, sir.
Oh, yeah.
The films of Michael Caine. Mm-hmm. No, the guy said, I think it was the other one, was Jaws of the Revenge. I wasn't sure anything about the film until I read the original paycheck. The guy knows he made rubbish.
Uh-huh.
That's fine.
Yep.
Hell, Sir Alec Guinness even said to his dying day that Star Wars was silly.
Uh-huh.
Got a nomination. He's got a whole legion of fans, but it's silly.
And who knew how right he was?
Who knew? What are you talking about?
Well, it all took us all 20 years later to realize at least the newer version.
Yeah, and get off Hayden Christensen's back. You know, he didn't sink that franchise. But he didn't also want to go in the village and get Starfleet converters, okay?
Yeah.
Jeez. All right, here's some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
And on that note, what the hell is Abdul... Oh, jeez, I can't read that text. All right. Joe Shearer, thanks for sitting in. Congratulations, Chris. Congratulations to the Lloyd family. We'll see you guys soon. Kobe Slagle working the board. So good to hear everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for doing everything else.
Whatever you do.
Until that voodoo that you do so well. Until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology here on WFYI HD2 The Point, Indianapolis, WFYI.org, iTunes, and podcast. See ya!